I guess I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope with you guys. I'm a little nervous. There's a lot more up here than I thought. I guess I'll just start with how I got here. I started doing other outside issues and drinking between the ages of 11 and 12. And I played one hell of a game of Geographic. People move, towns or cities. I moved countries. That just sounded like a really good idea to me. And I bounced back and forth from here to Toronto a few times. I lived in Napa. I lived in Tahoe. And everywhere I went, I seemed to manage to make a really big mess of things. And then I would think, oh, it's just these people. Oh, it's just this place. Oh, I just need to move and start over and be fresh. And I would do that. And then I would make a new mess somewhere else. And I would hurt people in the process. And I would leave a lot of wreckage for my family and my friends to clean up. And when I was doing all of this, my mom had told me at one point, I was about to turn 15, she said, if you leave to go to Toronto again, you're not coming back here. You cannot come back in my home and disrupt the family here and your brother. You're going to have to decide. You either want to be here or you don't. And at the wise age of 15, I decided to go ahead and just move to Toronto for that last time. And so I'm going to be 27. I've been on my own for almost 12 years. When I did that, I started making very adult decisions, and I started focusing very much on partying and drinking. I had always drank in parties, like I said, but it just got, I had no accountability now. I didn't have to sneak it around mom and dad. I didn't have to hide it from anybody. So I just did what I wanted to do. When I moved to Toronto, I moved in with my biological father for a while, and he is an alcoholic. He's not in recovery, but he is currently sober. And the first time I asked him to buy me alcohol, he said, what do you want? And I said, I want that big bottle of Absolut right there. And he said, okay, I'll buy it for you, but you have to drink the whole bottle or I'll never buy you alcohol again. He thought he was going to scare me. Stupid. I drank the whole bottle. And I got alcohol poisoning, but I drank the whole bottle. And that was the beginning of the end for me. That was the beginning of the challenge. Like, how much can I drink? I can be a big old badass and drink you under the table. I was 4'8", by the way. I'm barely 5 feet tall now, so you can imagine that's a lot of liquor for a little girl. And once I decided that living in Toronto wasn't working out for me anymore, I moved to Tahoe, and that's when my drinking and using seriously accelerated. And I know that this is an AA meeting, but I do have to include the fact that I used, because it is a huge part of how I got here. When I moved back to Visalia, it was for a guy. Big shocker. I'm sure nobody's done that before. And he was fun, and we partied, and he's like, why don't you just move back and you can live with me until you get on your feet? And that was great. And then I got pregnant. And I didn't really like him, was the thing. He was just kind of fun. So that made the fun go downhill really quick. And I was raised by really, really good parents. I had a really good upbringing. I was surrounded by normies. And so I had in my heart that I wanted to be a good parent to this child. And so I managed to stay almost 100% sober during my pregnancy. My doctor had told me I could have a glass of wine every week, so I found the biggest glass in my house, and I had a glass of wine every week on the money at the time, you know. And then when it was over, I said to myself, after I had him and I held him in my arms, I'm like, I am never going to drink or use again, ever. My life is going to be about raising this little boy, and I think that lasted for about 6 days, and then I was back out again, and I was putting him to bed early and doing my thing on his naps and, having getting a glass and a bottle of wine and leaving the glass and drinking the bottle, that kind of thing. And I managed to hide it for a while because my mom had told me when I had him that if I went back to my old life, that she would not hesitate to have him taken away from me, because it was more important to her that he got a chance at life than for her to co-sign my bullshit. So I had that instilled in me, that fear that I was going to lose him from the get-go. And I proceeded to hide that for a year and a half after he was born. And by the time he was a year and a half old, I had something I'd never had before. I had something. I had a car, I had a really good job, I had a place to live that was mine, that I had furnished, and I had this beautiful baby. And up until that point, I hadn't had anything to call my own because I had abandoned that so that I could follow the drink. And I went to a woman who, very long story, is now my mother-in-law, and I said to her, who is not my son's father's mother, if you can figure it out now. I said to her, I can't stay sober, and if I don't get sober in 30 days, I want you to call CPS and have Jaden taken away from me, because I am not going to screw him up. And that was really hard for me to do, but I really, really, really loved this kid. And I had lost track of time, she tells me. And so I guess I didn't know 30 days had gone by, but one day I was sitting outside on my patio and I had just put him to bed. And I had told myself that morning, I'm not going to drink and I'm not going to use today. And then all of a sudden I come to consciousness and I'm sitting on my patio smoking and drinking. And I'm like, how did I get here? When did I go to the store? Where did I buy this? Like, I had totally just gone on autopilot, and there I was once again. And I had what I would call now, but not then, but now I called it, I will call it my first spiritual awakening. And I just felt like God was telling me, you're running out of time. You can only do this for so much longer, and then it's going to catch up to you. So the next day I went to work, dropped Jaden off at daycare. I was there for 2 hours and I had this horrible pit in my stomach and I couldn't shake that I couldn't stay sober. I mean, there had been a lot of times that I look back now that I had tried to get myself sober and it wasn't working, but I never would have identified it as that then because I was just very sick. And I told my boss, you know, I'm not really feeling well. I think I need to go home for the rest of the day. And I went home and I'm sitting outside. And all of a sudden, I pick up the phone and start calling. This is so God. I just have to tell you guys. This from this point on was God. I pick up the phone and I start calling my EAP, my Employee Assistance Program, and getting the number for outpatient treatment facilities. And there's one right down the street from my house. It was Family Recovery Center. Some of you have been there. And I called like 27 times. And finally, Tracy answered the phone. And I didn't know her then, but she's a very good friend now. And she said, how old are you? And she got my information. And she said, what's your experience with drugs and alcohol? And I told her. And she said, do you think you're sick enough to be here? Well, that was the wrong thing to say to me. I said, lady, I'm sicker than you think I am. And I hung up the phone on her. And I called my mom, and I said, I was trying to go to IOP, but the lady pissed me off, so now I don't want to go there. And she said, you know, if you want to go to inpatient, I'll watch Jaden for you for 30 days. And I hung up on her and called the insurance company back and got a list of inpatient facilities. And every one of them I called sounded very, I don't know, they didn't sound warm and welcoming, and I was very damaged, and I just really wanted someone to be like, hey, we want you here, and they were like, what's your insurance? And that was not the response I was looking for. And the last one I called was called the Camp Recovery Center, which is in Scotts Valley, and a woman named Marilyn answered the phone, and she said, what's your name? And I gave her all my information, and the first thing she said after that was, don't worry about the money. Don't worry about the insurance. Just get here. And that's when I knew I'd found the right place. I won't say treatment was easy. When I left for treatment, my mom said I couldn't talk to or see my son the whole time I was gone. That was really hard for me because I had never been away from him longer than 8 hours in his life. I went and I was a hot mess. And I used to pack my stuff every 3 or 4 days, and I'd pull my sheets off the bed, and I'd carry them downstairs, and I'd throw them in the laundry, and I'd pack my stuff, and I'd tell my counselor, get my papers together, I'm going home to that baby. And she'd say, fine, you can go home, but she'll never really have you. He'll never really know who his mom is, but you can go home. And I'm very defiant, if you guys can't tell the pattern by now. So then I give her the big F you and head back upstairs and put the sheets back on my bed, and I'm going to stay here and prove you wrong. And my mother-in-law had said to me right before I left, honey, if you do this, this will be the first thing you've ever done to your life, in your life, to completion. And so I had a lot of people challenging me, and I don't know, I guess that's what I needed, because God really used that to keep me there. And when I was there, I heard a lot and saw a lot I needed to guarantee. And the whole 30 days was a very spiritual experience for me. I was voted most likely to relapse. And because, as everybody said to me, I drank more, I spilt more than you drank. And I thought, well, you spilt a lot, dude. But I don't know. I left there, and I had been warned about this pink cloud. Oh, you get out of treatment, and you're on a pink cloud. That was not the case for me. When I left treatment, I found out that in the 30 days I was gone, my mom, who had just gone through radiation and chemotherapy for breast cancer, had also come down with Bell's palsy and was recovering from that. On the drive home, my dad was on the way out of the OR from a surgery he had to have that had to do with his heart. And when I got home, I was dealing with those two things, and I decided I wanted to go see my best friend. And I drove by her house, and she walked out front and said, oh, you don't know. And I said, I don't know what. And she said, Noah has a brain tumor. And Noah is her son, who's 3 months younger than my son. So he was almost 2 at the time. And that was the pink cloud I came home to, and it immediately scared the shit out of me, because I realized right at that moment that all the intentions I had had in treatment of not getting a sponsor, not working the steps, not going to meetings, not seeking, you know, God's will for my life, it wasn't going to work out for me. I was pretty convinced when I got to treatment that, well, two things. First of all, I didn't go to treatment primarily for alcohol. I went for the other stuff. And when I was talking to a counselor, he said, tell me about your last drunk. And I said, well, I went to Tahoe, and I was drinking with my buddies, and my boyfriend was with me, and I got really drunk, so I went to the bathroom and made myself throw up so I could drink some more. And then I went back and I drank some more, and I went back and threw up again and came back and drank some more. And then I couldn't walk, so I was like crawling across the floor, and I smacked my head on the table, and he's like reenacting the whole thing in the counseling room, like smacking his head on the table and everything. And he's like, yeah, that's sober behavior. Because when I got there, I was like, you know what, it's cool, I can stop doing the other stuff. Just tell me how to stop doing the other stuff, and as long as I can drink, everything's going to be okay. And when I realized in treatment that that wasn't going to be the case for me, and then I got out and life kind of smacked me in the face, I realized I had to do something about it. So the next day, I called Tracy back another 27 times. So she finally answered, and I said, I need to go to IOP. And the next day she got me in, and she said, this is about a 2-month program, and I stayed for 7 because I was too afraid to leave. I did get a sponsor the week that I got out of treatment, but my sponsor has been in the program, my sponsor then has been in the program for a very long time, and she was well aware that pushing me to do anything was not going to make anything stick for me. At about 5 months sober, I had made a complete catastrophe of my now sober life. At 2 months sober, I got married. At 3 months sober, I was pregnant with my second child. And I felt like I was going crazy. So I made myself a psychologist appointment up in Fresno, and I got majorly lost. And when I got there, I was bawling, and I'm like, you don't understand. I need to be seen. I'm not okay. She said, okay, honey, let me see if I can reschedule your appointment. Just have a seat right there. I said, okay. About 10 minutes later, the cops walked in. We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. I'm like, okay. He's like, I'm like, no, no, really, I'm fine. I'm good. And he's like, well, they don't usually call me if you're good. And I'm like, no, I'm okay. I'm just having a really bad day. I'm newly sober. I'm pregnant. I'm married to an asshole. This is how this goes. And he said to me, well, are you really upset you're pregnant? And I said, no. And he said, well, is your husband really an asshole? And I said, no. And he said, are you really okay? And I'm like, no. And he said, you know, I can take you over to St. Agnes, and they have a psychiatrist on duty or a psychologist, and they can see you, and then you can go home. And I said, okay, let's do that. So I call my mom. I'm like, Mom, this is where my car's going to be. They're going to take me to St. Agnes. So my mom met me there. There was no such doctor on staff that day. So they threw my butt in an ambulance and drove me down to Cody Adult and Mental Health. And I'm thinking, oh, I get to see a doctor, and they're going to give me something to make me feel better, right? Because that's what we do. We chase something to make us feel better. So I get there, and I realize very quickly that this is not where I want to be at all. The woman, has anybody ever seen The Ring? Because when I got there was like a 40-year-old version of the little girl from The Ring crawling across the floor yelling, you stole my book. And I was like, oh my God. what have I done? So I had to stay the night there because there was no such doctor on staff that day there either. And the next morning, I got seen, and he told me, you know, you're not supposed to make any major decisions your first year of sobriety. And I'm like, are you part of them too? He's like, no, but I've dealt with lots of you. And he's like, you're not crazy. You're newly sober. You don't know how to deal with life. You're pregnant, and you just got married. You need to just go home and take a load off. And I went home, and I called my sponsor, and she came to my house and sat down with me and started educating me on what I now know was what I was really suffering from at that point, which was not craziness. It was untreated alcoholism. I was not working my steps. I was not turning my will and my life over to the care of God. I had no desire to do that. I thought that what had worked for everyone else surely could not work for me, because if you knew how broken I was on the inside, if you knew about the messes I made and the people I hurt and the people I tried to kill and all the insanity that I created in my life, you guys were going to kick me out. And then she took me to a really cool place. She took me to this group called the Primary Purpose Group on Thursday night. And she said, I want you to listen to some of these stories. And as I was listening to people tell their story, I was hearing things that were crazier than what I had done. I was listening to things that were scarier than what I had done. And these people were recovered. So my sponsor started taking me through what was called the Bedevilments exercise, when I started really examining the dysfunction in all of my relationships, because it was all run on my self-will. And that was a really eye-opening thing for me, because it wasn't just like, oh yes, I'm powerless, I get it, mercy. It was like, no, I'm powerless. I can't force you to do what I want you to do, and I can't use God as the pinata I've always thought he was. See, I had a very warped view of love. If you loved me, you did what I wanted you to do. If you didn't love me, you did not do what I wanted you to do, and then I had no use for you. And that was how I treated God. I had this belief that if this God was who everybody said he was, then I would have an endless supply of booze and no trouble and lots of boys, and this would be a fabulous life for Lauren. And maybe a nice car, because that sounds like fun. But that just didn't work out that way. And, you know, I've been sober since April 12th of 2010. And thank you. It's a drop in the bucket. But I don't have the same story everybody does, you know, about the steps. The steps were totally in God's time for me, because if I would have done it my way, I would have blown through them and missed all the lessons. I'm very A-type, let's get it done, let's move on. I don't camp on things or places or people. I'm gone. And I actually did steps 1 through 4 3 times with 3 different sponsors. And it just sort of happened that way. My first sponsor had to get treatment for a medical condition, so another sponsor stepped in to be temporary for me. And then that sponsor ended up moving. My original sponsor ended up moving, and then I found another sponsor, and that was part of her deal. We had to go back over it all. It took me months and months and months to get through step one because I was unwilling to relinquish control. I was unwilling to relinquish the idea that I could force a square peg into a round hole if I just had enough time to work it out. And when I got to step four, you know, that was, a lot of people talk about how intimidating step four is, and for me that was a huge relief. I had so much resentment and anger toward me that the first time I did it, it was like, oh. And then the second time I did it, it was like, wow, there was more. And then the third time I did it, I was like, really? I hope that's all, because I'm tired of carrying all that crap around. It's a lot of weight. It was so much weight. I didn't realize how much weight it was to carry till I got it off my chest. And, you know, then I guess I had missed this whole thing about inventory. You know, it's not just the bad, it's the good too. As my current sponsor says, you don't just take inventory of the crap you throw out, you take the inventory of the crap you keep also. And that was really good for me, because I was able to say, you know, God, I guess there is something you can work with here, and I'm going to let you do that. And then, you know, 5, 6, I was well aware of my defects of character by that time, and I was willing to admit them and all of my faults, and that was okay. I did not have a problem with that. But then we got to this lovely little step 7 thing, and my sponsor says, hey, now you're on step 7, and I'm thinking, we can just breeze past this. I'm the most humble person I know. And, oh, it makes me laugh every time I think about it. So we start doing step 7. And I'm like, oh, I might have a little bit of an ego. And then we get a little further in, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I have an ego. And then we're, like, knee-deep, and I'm like, oh, shit, my ego is so big, it's blinding me. It's blinding me from seeing the truth in my life about everything, including the way that I treat the people I love the most, which is probably the most important and valuable thing that I've gotten out of my sobriety, next to my relationship with God, is my relationship with the people that I love. And the blessing it is to have been able to repair those relationships by being a living amends to them. And every time my sponsor would ask me, are you ready to move on from step 7? I would say, I don't think I have a good enough foundation yet. I just didn't feel like I was ready. So it was like she gave me assignments and we did those, and then she gave me more assignments and we did those, and then she had to go to her sponsor to get assignments, and then we did those. And then finally her sponsor told her to tell me, Lauren needs to pick her own assignment because I have run out of things from the big book that she can do. And so I did. I picked my own assignment, and it was just tracking my attitude toward things. And if I was, I had kind of combined what I learned in step 7 with something I learned in step 3, which was what it feels like to be in my will versus God's will. And when I'm not being humble and I'm being self-serving and egotistical, I'm not in God's will. I am in my will. And I am trying to impose that will on everyone else and everything else. And, you know, it's like when you play the big shot, that all, my father-in-law always says, when you play the big shot, that only works one time. And then nobody wants to be around you anymore after that. And that's kind of how I was rolling. I was like, I'm going to play the big shot, you're going to stick around. But people didn't want to stick around because they didn't like that about me. So then I did step 8, and now I am currently working on step 9. And, you know, it's taken me, like I said, it's taken me a long time to get here, which is not everybody's story, but the way that God has perfectly placed the step I am working on in my life, I couldn't have done a better job. He has made it so that I have gotten stuck in places where I need to be stuck, because the things that are going on in my life are helping teach me the principles of this program and how to apply them to my life. I could really, really force myself through the whole thing and miss the miracle. And I'm really, really grateful that I've had 2 sponsors who have recognized that it is not their place to force me through the steps. That it's God's timing, it's not their timing, it's not my timing. And just to tell me and give me a pass, not to put pressure on myself. Now, don't get me wrong, there's times I've totally slacked off and I've paid the price for it. The whole restless, irritable, discontent thing. And I hate it. And I know the second that I'm feeling that way, that it's because I'm not doing what I've been taught to do in this program. And I have a good support system. I have an amazing support system. I mean, just incredible, with lots of accountability. And I can reach out and say, I'm not doing the deal. And I don't get judged. I get encouraged. I don't know anywhere else in my life that I could go and say, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And I get encouraged. Mostly, I get judged, and that's not what I need in order to grow spiritually, and that's not what I want to give other people in order to help them grow spiritually. So that's a beautiful, beautiful gift I've been given in this program. I don't know, needless to say, life happens, and learning to accept life on life's terms has been a big challenge, as you can tell. But when I do that, and I teach the, I mean, I chant to myself on a daily basis, acceptance is the key to my happiness today, because if I lose acceptance, I lose my harmony with God. I can shut myself off from Him really, really fast. And that's a dark place. And I don't want to be there. I don't want to go back. I had enough time to figure out that that's not how I wanted to live. And so that's just one of those things that I have to tell myself, that even though life happens and life can get pretty messy and ugly, I'm not alone. And God has a plan, and that He knew everything was going to happen to me the way it's happening to me, and that if I just keep my side of the street clean, practice these principles in all my affairs, and trust that I can let go to a very capable God and let Him do what I cannot do, that everything's going to turn out exactly the way it's supposed to be. Now, that does not mean exactly the way Lauren wants it to be. Because if that was the case, then I would just be my own God, and I would just do my own thing. But I'm always pleasantly surprised at the way God crafts things. And in my current life right now, I am learning to step out of the way in the biggest situation. My biggest hang-up after alcoholism is my beautiful, wonderful, loving husband. And I am learning how to let him go to God, and how to stay out of the way of trying to fix him, and how to trust that the God who saved my life, I've always said this ever since I got in this program, I made a poor decision to get married without waiting a year. That is something I don't suggest to anybody. There's a reason for that. You have to figure out like who you are before you start making decisions on your own behalf. And, you know, now I can just kind of look at it and say, okay, God, I made this really big mess. Again, I know you're not surprised, but I also know that the God who saved my life can save my marriage and can put everything just precisely the way it's supposed to be. And so that's what I do. I just wake up in the morning, and, you know, meditating is really huge for me. When I first met my current sponsor, I thought she was kind of new agey because she was talking about this meditation stuff, and I had never heard of anybody else in AA, like, actually meditating. Like, I got it. It says it in the steps, but I never really heard people actually meditating. And so I met my sponsor, and she's like, oh, I have this meditation meeting at my house, and I'm like, weird, okay. I wouldn't miss that meeting if my life depended on it. When I meditate, I'm going to use your line. When I meditate, I'm listening to God. You know, praying is when I talk to him, and meditating is my opportunity to listen to him and get aligned with him. And when I do that, I can go about my day with a different peace and serenity, knowing that my God has got my back, without question. I don't know what my life would be like if I hadn't, well, yes, I do. I know exactly what my life would be like if I hadn't been introduced to meditation, but I'm so blessed that it's there. And I'm really, really thankful for all the tools I've been given in this program. And look at that, I managed to talk almost the whole time. That's really all I have. So thanks for letting me share, guys. Thanks for letting me do a service. Oh, by the way, if anybody needs a sponsor, I'm available. I'd love to take on some girls. And if anybody has any questions, I guess I'm supposed to take questions. Was I self-explanatory? I don't think there's questions.
Well, you offered about being a sponsor for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't hear that very often. You know, people don't just come up and say that.
Yeah.
What makes you want to do that?
You want me to answer that?
Yeah.
What makes me want to be a sponsor? I want to help another alcoholic through the steps as I've been taught so they can get the gift that I've been given. To watch the light come on. Anything else? Are we good? Okay. I think we're good.